All right, this is Pure Decking, show number 381 for Thursday. What is today? February the 27th, 2020, I think. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and why the hell is my file server making these noises? I'm Morps. Tonight we have Mad Men. What is up, Mad
Men? Braunschweiger. It may have been stuffed with Braunschweiger.
That's
not that terrifying. That would ever do that.
Now I'm going to have to open it up and then discover what has gone on inside of the file server. And if that's what it is, well, if that's what it is, I might be doing a road trip for, it's like, who put this in the files? Anyways, so no station news for tonight, nothing to... too crazy going on. However, if we do lose this recording, it's because my file server blew up in the middle of it, and unfortunately the file server is part of the recording setup, so that would actually kind of suck. So if there's no show posted this week, that's why. I don't know. Madman, do you have anything interesting you want to bring up before we start?
Watching people lose their shit because we're not able to move things from file server to file server is very interesting.
You got that going on right now?
Yep, but it's not my problem to fix. So I just take it as an extended break whenever I can't move the information I need to move around.
That's not a bad way to look at it. So... my problem is I can't get them to set up secure file servers. It's like, yeah, we'll just keep using the old one. The old one has the wrong permissions on it. Or my absolute favorite, I had an accountant one time tell me, can you just open this up to everybody? I don't know who needs it. So, you know, I just want it open to everybody. And then I look
like
at
the entire planet?
Yeah, anybody, no. Anybody who could connect to that file server, which would be anybody in the company. So, for fun, take a wild guess what data, because I went in the folder and looked to see what this was, what data was he wanting me to give everyone in the company access to?
Oh, we're going to go get an accountant, possibly for your company payroll?
That's right, we have a winner. I told him no, and he got very angry.
Like, nobody needs to know how much money I make a week.
It's like, you realize this is, like, all kinds of illegal, right? Yeah, he did not understand, and he got very angry, and he tried to escalate it up the chain. And at first, my boss was like, why did you tell this guy no? And, of course, you know, I answered my boss in my usual fashion, because he's a fucking idiot. Look at what data he wants to open up to the company. Oh, look, here's how much money you make. That was all it took.
This is what... oh, and if it has direct deposit, possibly the account numbers of everyone that you're paying.
Didn't see that in there. It was more a... it looked like some kind of a report out of the HR system.
But, oh, I love people.
Yeah, he didn't know who was supposed to have it, so why don't we just open it up to everybody? Oh, luckily, that was 4 years ago, and I'm fairly certain that idiot doesn't work for us anymore. But anyways, so let's move on here to the first story for tonight. This is from Ars Technica. We could probably do a whole show of just horror stories from work involving computers in some manner, couldn't we?
Yes.
Of course, we'd have to sit there and figure out how to anonymize it so you're not violating any laws or getting anybody in trouble. especially for our industry. Now that I think about
depending on how far back you want to go, I've got horrors from two different industries, three different large companies.
Just wait and do it in 10 to 20 years. There you go, Psychros. I don't know. The way things are going with my current company, I might still be there in 10 to 20 years. Things are actually doing pretty good at the moment for me. So, I even got a new job title. Doesn't actually change anything, but I did get a new job title. So, and the payroll that goes with it. But, anyways, yeah, once statute of limitations runs out, statute of limitations is one thing, but confidentiality agreements are usually something else. So, they're not non-disparaging agreements, I think is what they actually
non-disclosure.
Are. So, no, I'm pretty sure the ones in our handbook are non-disparaging agreements, but anyways. I could do some fun ones from the school, probably. But that was a school. It wouldn't really shock anybody. So, most of the time trying to figure out who shit-kicked a lab computer when they had deep freeze on it. That was good times. It's like, yeah, figure out who trashed this hard drive. That would be the deep freeze program you have installed on it that cleared all of your logs. So... anyways, so the first article I have for tonight is from Ars Technica. Removing a GPS tracking device from your car isn't theft, court rules. So, yeah, Indiana High Court, removing a small, unmarked device from your car isn't theft. An Indiana man may beat a drug prosecution, An Indiana man may beat a drug prosecution after the state's highest court threw out a search warrant against him late last week. The search warrant was based off the idea that the man had stolen a GPS tracking device belonging to the government. But Indiana's Supreme Court concluded that he had done no such thing and the cops should have known it. Yeah, this is kind of a no-duh. Last November, we wrote about the case of Derek Huring, an Indiana man in the Warwick County Sheriff's Office suspected of selling meth. I read that right. Okay. Authorities got a warrant to put a GPS tracker on his car, getting a stream of data on his location for 6 days, but then the data stopped. Officers suspected Hume had discovered and removed the tracking device. After waiting for a few more days, they got a warrant to search his home and a barn belonging to his father. They argued the disappearance of the tracking device was evidence that he had stolen it. If you put it on his car, even if he doesn't know it's there, I don't think it's theft. I think it's a gift.
They gave me this tracking device. Look how easily it tells them where I am.
During their search, police found the tracking device and some methamphetamine. So, okay, yeah, this guy was probably a drug dealer, or at least a user. They charged Huring with the drug-related crimes as well as the theft of the GPS device. But at trial, Huring's lawyers argued that the warrant to search the home and barn had been illegal. An application for a search warrant must provide probable cause to believe a crime was committed. But removing a small, unmarked object from your personal vehicle is no crime at all, Huring's lawyers argued. Huring had no way of knowing what the device was or who it belonged to and certainly had no obligation to leave the device on his car. An Indiana appeals court ruled against Huring last year, but Indiana Supreme Court seemed more sympathetic to Huring's case during oral arguments last November. I am really struggling with how that is theft, said Judge Stephen David during November's oral arguments. We find it reckless. Oh, that's the heading. Sorry. Last Thursday, Indiana's High Court made it official, ruling that the search warrant that allowed police to recover Huring's meth was illegal. The police had no more than a hunch that Huring had removed the device, the court said, and even that wasn't enough to get a search warrant. Even if the police could have proved that Huring had removed the device, it wouldn't prove he stole it, the High Court said. It's hard to steal something if you have no idea to whom it belongs. Classifying his action as theft would lead to absurd results, the court noted. To find a fair probability of unauthorized control here, we would need to conclude that the users don't have the authority to remove unknown, unmarked objects from their personal vehicles, Chief Justice Loretta Rush wrote for a unanimous court. Not to mention the problems of what if the thing just falls off? You know, depending on how they've got it mounted, like if they're trying to like use magnets or something, what if you just hit a strong pothole and the thing falls off? Or, you know, maybe you've got a real shit-kicked car and, you know, the thing's attached to the bumper and the whole damn bumper falls off, you know? I don't know. The High Court's ruling has big implications for Shearing's case. Under a principle known as the exclusionary rule, evidence uncovered during an invalid search warrant is excluded from trial. Without the meth recovered in this search, prosecutors might not have enough evidence to make a case against him. Well, I don't know. Since they know that he had meth, even though they can't use it in a trial, I'm betting they can. That gives them all kinds of direction to go get other evidence, which
that
arguably is still unfair.
And the fruit of the poisonous tree, it's only kind of gone. That if they can show that they would have found it another way, they can get it back.
The law allows for a good faith exception to the exclusionary rule in some cases where police rely on a warrant that later proves defective. So in other words, it's just an honest mistake, like somebody made a clerical error on the warrant, I would imagine. But Justice Rush concluded that the exception doesn't apply here. We find it reckless for an officer or an officent. That's a okay for an officer efficient. I guess that's a legal term to search a suspect's home in his father's barn based on nothing more than a hunch that a crime has been committed. The court wrote, "We are confident that applying the exclusionary rule here will deter similar reckless conduct in the future." I agree with the court here that it's certainly not theft because it's attached to his car. And if you take that kind of thinking out to its logical conclusion, that means the police can plant any device anywhere on your property, because your car is considered your property, and if you remove it, it's a crime. So if the police decide they're going to break into your house when you're not home, set up cameras, and maybe not even be all that, you know, quiet about it, and then just wait for you to come in and say, "What the hell is this?" and unplug it and charge you with, you know, getting the camera. That's
the breaking into your house would be a bit of a difficulty. The better one would be
putting
they
it in the window.
Set something on your front porch. You pick it up and walk into your house.
It's
like
death.
Just like a box of something. Open up the box, see what's left on your front porch. They now have probable cause to get a search warrant to go into your house.
Yeah, this would be abused all to hell if the court didn't rule the way it did. And the fact that a lower court, you know, agreed with the police is even scarier. Because, you know what? Yeah, the guy's dealing meth. I hope they figure out a way to get that back in court and get him in jail for dealing meth. Because, you know, a little bit of a difference between somebody occasionally toking up weed and meth. You know? So I could forgive somebody if they get them on a little bit of pot or something. It's like, okay, whatever. But that some of this harder stuff, and if you ever look up what's actually in meth, it's not, it's not even consistent because it's made with, like, battery acid and bleach and a bunch of other shit. So it's like, you know, that's not, that's not kosher. That's not something I want somebody messing with. Although, I guess if he's just making it and using it himself.
Nobody uses it themselves. If you're making it, you're selling it.
I know. I'm trying to square it with the idea of free markets because, you know, I like free markets. But at the same time, that's a... Where do we fall on that one? I was like, wait a minute.
On meth? I'm cool with people using anything so long as they know what they're doing. Okay. Like an adult, I'm cool with them using it. Now, I don't think we should be making garbage meth. I think some nice pharmaceutical grade methamphetamines from a drugstore.
Oh, you mean like the Air Force uses? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be fine. I guess that'd be all right. As long as everybody knew what they were doing and, you know, all that. But, you know, if this guy was selling to kids or something, then yeah, obviously. I mean, and I don't know that he was. But, you know, I don't want to see people get away with actual crimes, but the police shouldn't have all authority in prosecuting that, you know? So, I just, yeah. Yeah, and again, this whole idea of, you know, they put this thing on his car, and he took it off because he didn't know what it was, which is an easy argument to make. Or hell, you probably can tell what the hell the GPS tracker is. They're not going to be, I mean, there's only going to be a few things. A small unmarked device with a blinking LED on it's going to be, right? I don't know that that's what it was. I know there's a few different designs of the things floating around out there, but they're not very big. I suppose I got
a random not my car part in my car.
Yeah.
I felt it necessary to remove it.
You know, I found a chunk of wood in my radiator the other day, and I assumed I picked it up on the highway, so what did I do? I pulled it out, threw it away. And did I commit a crime by stealing this chunk of wood? No. What'd you steal it from? My own car or the highway? I'm not sure which. But, you know, it's like, come on.
Stole it from Gaia, Mother Earth. You took her wood.
There's a sound clip in there, and I'm just gonna let that go. But anyways, but yeah, this, I mean, you know, it had to get all the way up to the Supreme Court before somebody said, "Wait a minute, how can you charge this guy with theft when he didn't know what the, you know, you put something on his car and he found it, right?" I mean, well, one, how good of a job did you do hiding the thing on his car if he found it? And two, how do you know he didn't just park his car in the barn and the thing fell off?
The falling off is unlikely. See, how good of a job? Depends. How often does a dude do maintenance on his car?
Yeah. I mean, again, if it's an old junker that needs constant attention. Or
that, and
maybe he's just a tinkerer. Maybe he likes getting under the hood.
Meth addicts are crazy paranoid. So he may have searched his car thinking there's a bug there because he's on meth. And then he may have decided, do you know what would be awesome? If I improved this car, all I'm going to do is take this bicycle that's been in my barn for decades. I'm going to take it apart and I'm going to integrate it with the car, and the whole thing's going to move faster.
Because we're going to take the 0.1 horsepower of a child's bicycle and add it to the existing 40 horsepower of this Dodge Durango. Or I don't know what car he's got. I'm just making shit up at this point. But, you know.
Yes, that's the way meth addicts think.
But
that will turn it all green because it's now going to be pedal powered. I'm going to have a V8 that runs off of me pedaling it.
It's like, what the hell's this? I don't know, but it's not in the car. It's adding drag. Get rid of it. Wait a minute. If it's a GPS tracker and it stopped getting signal, that means it had to be either A, getting power from the car, or B, the battery died, which means they could have just waited for the battery to die and then say, oh, we think he stole it. But if it's getting power from the car, I mean, that's more than just waiting for the guy to be busy and slipping something into the bumper. I mean,
that's checking a couple terminals.
Yeah.
You actually do that from under the car.
Yeah.
You just need a skinny person. You couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Or you might be able to do it. Any.
Depends on the car, too. If he's got a big old truck or something, you know. Jacked up truck.
If it's got a lift kit, then fat people can still get under it. But who the hell wants to put a lift kit on anything? It makes whatever you put it on useless.
Meth heads.
Yeah, crazy cowboys and meth heads.
So, I don't know. I don't know. I'm just speculating at this point. But, I mean, because there's no statements from the guy saying, I just found this thing and I didn't know what it was. But, I mean, like what? Was it like plugged into the cigarette lighter or something obvious where it's like, oh, what's this? I mean, you know.
Yeah, I'm thinking battery terminals.
Yeah. Well, I could easily see that. You know, if they attach it to the battery terminals and maybe if it came loose and is rattling around, what do? You open up the thing to see what's rattling in there. Huh? What the hell's this, you know? So, Psychro says, get battery terminals, get your car, getting the hood open. Well, that varies in difficulty depending on what kind of car it is. I mean, some cars you could probably open the hood with a Slim Jim without too much difficulty. Of course, other cars is probably crazy ass hard, so I don't know. Again, I don't. We don't know what car he had. We don't know how he found it. I suppose I could look in the article. I thought they had a. Let's see. Nope, that's still on the case. Found the tracking device. They didn't even say where they found it. They just said they found it. Yeah, they never say where he found it. Let's see. There's some people arguing in the comments that it is theft because he knew it wasn't his. But I have problems with that because it was attached to his car. You know?
Yeah, it's...
It's like, oh, you knew it wasn't yours, so you shouldn't have removed it. But it's on my car, right?
It is mine. It's my car.
Yeah. And if it's not labeled, I mean, I suppose it could have had a label if it said property of the sheriff, then, of course, then you know you're being tracked, right? So, although if this guy's a meth dealer, maybe he thinks he's in drug war and somebody's put a bomb in his car and he's getting rid of the bomb. So, I mean, Psycho said that and actually at the same time I just thought of that. Yeah, he doesn't know it's not like part of a bomb. So, I don't know. That's one of those ones where the details would really add some color to that. But at the same time, I like the general concept of the cops can't charge you for taking a tracking device, especially when it's on your property and it's not labeled. You know? I mean, it's also pretty reasonable to assume that if the guy was a drug dealer and he's occasionally checking his car, that maybe he does think, you know, like you said, he just gets paranoid as he occasionally searches the car for trackers. And in this case, he happened to find one. So, you know, maybe this is one of those guys who thinks, you know, who thinks there's gang stalking going on and he just, you know, proved it. And, you know, I don't know.
Meth addicts are paranoid.
But I mean, yeah, Psychros in the IRC is saying, well, it could have been like an ex-wife or a PI. Or, yeah, I mean, you don't even know that it belongs to the cops. It's just, you know, this thing that's attached to your car. You don't know what it is. And depending on how well you know your car, you know, you probably can tell it's not supposed to be there. And whereas it's a fairly easy guess in this day and age that it's probably a tracking device, you know, would you?
I don't know, fairly easy guess. I've never actually seen a tracking device on my car. Now, with his job, he might assume.
So, if you're curious what they look like, you can just go on Amazon and punch in car GPS tracker. There we go. First suggested search. Yeah, they're nothing. There's a little black one that plugs into the ODBC port. There's one that has a couple of terminals on it. Yeah, it's just a little black box, usually. The ones that say track it usually are kind of a good dead giveaway, but since it looks like they plug into ODBC, what they may have done is Slim Jimmed his door, got in there, and plugged the thing in, and then he happens to look down and see a little black box hanging out of his, you know, computer port, and he's like, what the fuck's this?
Oh, no, that's again under the hood. Stick it in the fuse box under the hood.
No, these plug into the ODB port, or OBD port, or whatever it is. Little one under the dash. So, yeah, they're all like $50 on Amazon. So, I mean, actually, there's one that's 25. So, yeah, I mean, it's even safe to assume if you found one that it might not be from the cops. So, maybe a dealer or a client or somebody wants to track him so they can rob him at the source. Yeah, I could see that. So, Anyways, I can think of a lot of reasons why this is, you know, why this court was correct in saying, okay, you can't just assume that if the tracker stops working, that it's theft, and that, you know, if even if you find the tracker, that, you know, that it was illegal for them to remove it because it was on their car. That's what I keep going back to. It was his fucking car, right? You know, if I come home and find something attached to the wall of my house, you know, whether it's on the inside or the outside, and it wasn't there yesterday, yeah, I'm probably going to pull it down too and go, what the hell's this? You know, or this is a 1980s camcorder duct taped to the window. What the hell? But I mean, it wouldn't be that, but it'd be a funny gag anyways. So, you have anything else on that one, Madman, before we move on?
Yeah, I think we've covered it.
All right, this next one is from the South China Morning Post. Pretty much because of the coronavirus, the facial recognition technology now can work around masks. So if you've been walking through around your city recently, believing the face mask you wear to protect you from the coronavirus is also fooling facial recognition cameras, we have bad news for you. Facial recognition is evolving. The new forms of facial recognition can now not just... can now recognize not just people wearing masks over their mouths, but also people in scarves and even with fake beards. And the technology is already rolling out in China because of one unexpected event, the coronavirus outbreak. Over the last several weeks, the deadly COVID-19 disease has forced millions of people across China to don surgical masks and N95 respirators. This has led China's AI champion SenseTime to adapt its facial recognition product to identify people wearing these masks, according to the announcement from the company last week. But this technology isn't exactly new. Stanford University postdoctoral fellow Amarjot Singh and his team published research on disguised facial identification in 2017. The algorithm made a breakthrough in recognizing people wearing eyeglasses, fake beards, scarves, and hard hats. Facial recognition identifies a person by locating several key points on the face and connecting them together to form a unique person-specific signature, Singh explained. These key points are usually around the eyes, nose, and lips, but facial recognition systems developed by Singh and others were able to recognize masked people by getting enough key points from just the eyes and the nose. Although this would be less accurate, a mask match can still be established, Singh said. When the work was originally published, Singh's team described disguised facial identification as extremely challenging. Their network was trained to detect 14 key points on photos, but the accuracy would drop depending on the disguise and complexity of the background behind the individual. Since then, more research has been done to improve facial recognition with masks, and it seems many now seek to commercialize it. Since time, which announced the rollout of its face mask busting tech last week, explained that its algorithm is designed to read 240 facial key points around the eyes, mouth, and nose. It can make a match using just the parts of the face that are visible. Generally speaking, the more key points the algorithm can include, the better the results, but there are also other factors involved. Yufei Wei, chief marketing officer of facial recognition company Quifang Technologies, explained that a facial recognition system doesn't necessarily need more data, but it does need more accurate data. There will be a more specific algorithm designed to recognize and match the special databases, Wei said. Researchers from the University of Bradford, led by Professor Hassan Ugai, improved their facial recognition model by feeding it partial face images and achieved 90% correct identification. A similar trick it was applied by another Chinese facial recognition company that claims it can now recognize people with masks. Facing the impact of COVID-19, Nanjing-based MiniVision launched an emergency data gathering campaign. Management urgently mobilized employees and relatives to collect a small-scale data set in 2 days. The key information that the system recorded on masked face was the eyes. So now you need to wear surgical mask and sunglasses and a hat and a fake beard. Or just a Spider-Man mask.
Ooh.
Can you imagine a whole crowd of people showing up in like a Spider-Man mask and just the facial recognition system just going, yep, Spider-Man, yep, more Spider-Man.
They're having problems, especially since you couldn't even get the depth of the eyes. But now that we're going 3D cameras, I'm thinking the shape of your skull could give enough points eventually.
I was actually surprised that they didn't say anything about, like, the ears. Because in a lot of these photos, you know, you can see people's ears, even if they've got the little straps from the mask over them. And I would think, like, vertical placement of the ears could be a factor. You know, maybe not so much how much they stick out, because wearing a hat or something can mess with that. But,
The ridge and the cartilage in your ear.
Yeah.
I wonder how unique that is.
Probably not unique enough, but if you combine it with a bunch of other data points, you know. But, yeah. Sucker says they can definitely tell if you're a Vulcan. I don't know. You might be an elf. Could be an elf. Could be one of 100 other fantasy species with pointed ears. So,
be a drow or a black Vulcan.
It's a Vulcan with a beard. Kill him! But
no, going about that logic, anyone with a goatee should be shot.
Well, yeah. It's been my experience, generally. But I don't know. I'm just... I mean, and again, in the IRC, Sacros has a good point that it's state media, so they might be just be kind of hyping it. And it does sound like this just rolled out. But Sacros has to go shave. Whoops. So, anyways, you know, it sounds like they're just now rolling it out. These companies saying, hey, look, we can do this. And it's being prompted because everybody's wearing masks because of the coronavirus. So, I don't know. I mean, right now, though, they're arresting people for not wearing masks in China. So, yeah, again, at this, it's getting to the point where you're just going to have to start wearing the Spider-Man mask all the time if you want to avoid the facial recognition cameras. So, which, depending on what movies are out, is easier to get away with.
Oh, I'm just cosplaying, sir. I've always liked being Rorschach.
Oh, actually, right now it's easy. It's like, no, just didn't want to take any risks at all with the virus, and this is the best thing I had. So, you know. Yeah, I guess that, you know, they're talking about surgical masks and scarves and hats. What do they do if somebody shows up with a Batman cowl on? I mean, you know.
Well, they can still see eye color.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't got your mouth, your chin.
I don't think a domino mask would help you. So Nightwing's fucked.
Okay, if we're going with DC masks, the majority of them don't really do shit.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. But like okay,
anyone that doesn't know who Hal Jordan is, just never met Hal Jordan.
Okay, what about Wolverine with the big wings on his head?
They'll ask, where are you still high from the 70s?
Yeah, the array of IR LEDs. So, we need to take the facial recognition, these new systems, and compare it with that anti-facial recognition makeup they had a few years ago and see which one wins. So,
yeah, because we've now got the facial recognition to remove makeup. That's where you need to compete it with.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Well, you know, eventually it'll just be you're walking down the street and the system's just going to know who you are based on, you know, hundreds of factors, because it's going to get to, well, we can't see this guy's face. We've only seen him from behind. So they'll be looking at things like gait. They'll be looking at things like height. So it'll get to the point where you have to dress up like a black mage from Final Fantasy and walk with a hunch to hide who you are. So Kiss makeup. What about if you're done up like you're going to a Kiss concert?
It's not going to take the cameras to know who you are. They're just going to look at the cell phones on that street.
That's a very good point, Madman. That is a very good point. Yeah. All right. I think we've beaten that one to death. You ready for the next one? Madman must have had an aneurysm at his keyboard. Next article is from Vice. Musicians algorithmically generate every possible melody, releasing them into the public domain. Okay, that's wrong. Two programmer musicians wrote every possible MIDI melody in existence to a hard drive, copyrighted the whole thing, and then released it all to the public in an attempt to stop musicians from getting sued. Let's see. Programmer, musician, and copyright attorney Damian Riley, along with fellow musician programmer Noah Rubin, sought to stop copyright lawsuits that they believe stifle the creative freedom of artists. Often in copyright cases for song melodies, if the artist being sued for infringement could have possibly had access to the music they are accused of copying, even if it was something they only listened to once, they can be accused of subconsciously infringing on the original content. One of the most notorious examples of this is Tom Petty's claim that Sam Smith's Stay With Me sounded too close to Petty's I Won't Back Down. Smith eventually had to give Petty co-writing credits on their own chart-topping song, which entitled Petty to Royalties. Okay, that's kind of fucked up. Defending a case like that in court can cost millions of dollars in legal fees, and the outcome is never assured. Riley and Rubin hope that by releasing the melodies publicly, they'll prevent a lot of these cases from standing a chance in court. In a recent talk about the project, Riley explained that to get their melody database, they algorithmically determined every melody contained within a single octave. To determine the finite nature of melodies, Ryle and Rubin developed an algorithm that recorded every possible 8-note, 12-beat melody combo. This is the same basic tactic some hackers use to guess passwords, churning through every possible combination of notes until none remained. Riley said this algorithm works at a rate of 300,000 melodies per second. Well, that would depend on what hardware they've got it on. But once a work is committed to a tangible format, it's considered copyrighted. And in MIDI format, numbers or notes are just numbers. Under copyright law, numbers are facts. And under copyright law, facts have either thin copyright, almost no copyright, or no copyright at all, Riley explained in the talk. So maybe if these numbers have existed since the beginning of time and we're just plucking them out, maybe melodies are just math, which are just facts, which are not copyrightable. All of the melodies they've generated, as well as the code for their algorithm that they've generated them, are available as open source materials on GitHub, and the data sets are on the Internet Archive. And I looked, and it's 12 terabytes of MIDI files, of which you know most of them are going to be crap. According to the project's website, Rubin and Riley released these melodies using a Creative Commons Zero license, which means they have no rights reserved. Functionally, this means they are similar to public domain works, though copyright lawyers disagree on whether this puts them truly into the public domain. A work is considered in the public domain if it's a government work or has had its copyright expire, which happens many decades after a work's release. The Creative Commons Zero license is the closest an artist can get to putting a work in the public domain without having the copyright actively expire. Is that true? You can't just make something and declare it public domain?
You can not copyright it, which is what usually happens, but that doesn't prevent someone else from copyrighting it.
I thought you could actively give up your copyright and say it's public domain. Can you not do that?
No, the way you do it is just not copyrighted to begin with.
Yeah.
Because at the point you're talking about, it's possible to uncopyright something that doesn't exist because I want to go file an uncopyright form.
Okay, fair point.
It's like The House of the Rising Sun. Really cool song. It's not copyrighted because no one knows who wrote it. The artist never bothered to copyright it. But it's been covered by dozens of bands. And now it's old enough that it's in public domain anyway.
Yeah, and then finally the article closes out, whether this tactic actually works in court remains to be seen. Copyright law is complicated and often nonsensical. It's difficult to say whether a court would consider Riley to be the author of a melody that is made popular by another artist. In any case, he's optimistic and it's a cool project. For just the melody, maybe those cases go away. Riley said maybe they're dismissed. I doubt it. There's enough money between these things that I somehow...
I don't see how popularity would come into it.
I'm thinking more
than money. Because either I own the copyright or I don't. It doesn't matter if no one likes my song.
I'm thinking more the money to use lawyers to get shit done.
Because oh, yeah.
Pretty much what has to happen is, let's say I write some music and put it out there, and then somebody says, you stole my melody. And I say, no, I didn't. I stole this guy's melody, and then point him at that database. You know, if I don't know to you, for one thing, if you don't know that this is out there, you can't possibly claim that, right? So you have to know that this guy's database exists to get it. And two, then this guy probably has to be willing to get a lawyer and say, yes, that is mine and I made it Creative Commons Zero. So, which I haven't read the Creative Commons Zero. No rights reserved. Of owner copyright or database protected content to waive those interests in the works solely place them as completely as possible in the public domain so that others may freely build, enhance, reuse the works for any purposes without restriction under copyright or database law. In contrast to while retaining their copyright. So in contrast to allow copyright holders to choose from a range of permissions, CC0 empowers yet another choice altogether, the choice to opt out of copyright and database protection. The exclusive rights automatically granted to the creators and no right reserved alternate licenses. They actually say on the Creative Commons site that this exists because you can't just put shit in the public domain. It says dedicating works to the public domain is difficult and not impossible for those wanting to contribute their works to the public for public use before applicable copyright or database protection terms expire. Few, if any, jurisdictions have a process for doing so easily and reliably. Laws vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. More challengingly, many legal systems effectively prohibit any attempt by these owners to surrender rights automatically conferred by law, particularly moral rights, even when the author wishing to do so is well informed and resolute about doing so. So, yeah, basically it's a copy. So Creative Commons Zero is effectively a copyright license that mirrors the public domain. So, but yeah, until this is used in court to defend a melody, and even then, you know, if you point at this guy and say, no, I copied this guy, there's nothing to stop, you know, whoever's suing you from just bringing this guy into it and saying, well, he copied my song too. You know, it's like, no, he didn't. His computer did. And that's the other problem with this that could probably get it dismissed fairly quickly is that all you have to do is find a melody in there that matches an existing song and show that he made it afterwards, meaning their copyright still wins because it's older, right? I appreciate what he's trying to do. He's trying to say melody isn't really something you should be copywriting. I mean, lyrics to a song, sure. But, you know, melody, I get where he's coming from. I mean, there is a finite collection of musical, you know, notes that sound good.
Well, even moving into crap, there's a finite level of notes.
That's true. Well, I mean, yeah, there is a finite number of notes. They used an algorithm to try to find them all. Arguably they didn't, because all you have to do, because they said they did a every possible 8-note, 12-beat melody combo, right? So what if my melody's 10 notes? You know, now it's not in his database. So yeah. Yeah. So, and if every 8-note, 12-beat melody combo came out to 12 terabytes, then, you know, by the time you got them all in, it's going to be pretty sizable. Any thoughts? I don't think this is going to have any effect.
It's a cool toy.
I think it's a cool toy, but I don't think it's going to have any actual effect on copyright law, unfortunately. All right, next one is from... I got this from AndreaGrandi.com. I think it's their personal blog. Google is moving some EU citizen data to the U.S. Which I think is a misleading headline because I think this has more to do with British data than EU data. As you may have heard already because of Brexit, Google is moving UK citizen data from the Northern Ireland data center to the US one, leaving the EU, UK citizens are not protected anymore by GDPR, and while this may be unfair, Google is legally allowed to do it. So, apparently they sent an email to everyone in the Eurozone saying we're improving our terms of service, making it easier for you to understand. Changes will take effect on 31st of March. Won't impact the way you use Google services because the UK is leaving EU. Google LLC will now be the service provider and data controller responsible for your information. Okay, so yeah, they're moving to the UK. The point is that if somebody's an Italian citizen living in Italy, they have nothing to do with the UK. And while they... Yeah, this person got the email and they're very confused by it. But basically what it boils down to is Google is going to be moving data out of their Ireland data center and moving that data into the United States where GDPR is not as... Well, basically is only enforced at by will. Right, if it's only if a company chooses to follow it because they want to do business in Europe or whatever. But Google is using the excuse of Brexit to move this data, but really I think they want to get it back under the US law because it's probably easier for them than the EU laws. So Google LLC will now be the service provider and data controller responsible for information and complying with privacy laws for UK consumer users. So it's also possible that when they sent out this notice, they sent it out overly broad. But and they have the full text of the email here, which I'm not going to read. But yeah, it pretty much is that Google is planning on moving a bunch of data from the North Ireland data center to the U.S. data centers. So what legal implications they have that has is interesting because they're literally moving data around for different. If you have data centers all over the world, I suppose you can do that. You can jurisdiction shop when it comes to what you're doing with data.
I kind of assumed they were already doing that.
I kind of did too, truth is. But I think there are some laws in the EU about how you have to store EU data within the Eurozone, within Eurozone data centers. So, and I can see why you would have a law like that. It's so you can ensure compliance with your laws. But Google is using the excuse of Brexit to move their data around, or at least announce that they're doing it. So, I don't know. It's just interesting. I don't really know how that all plays out and what all that'll happen. Especially because we had that story we talked about a couple of years ago about Microsoft not complying with warrants because the data was not, you know, they wanted a U.S. warrant, but the data center was in, actually, I think that was in Ireland as well. So Microsoft said, no, we don't have to comply with that warrant because it's not valid because that data is not in the United States. So... I don't know the full implications of this, but it's interesting. But yeah, they are totally... I mean, this is something Google can totally do. And even if they can't, what's Europe realistically going to do about it? They're not going to block Google. I mean, I can see them threatening it and trying to get fines and stuff out of them, because they do that every once in a while anyways. But I can't see them realistically blocking Google. There's too many people who think that Google is the internet. I don't know how that would go down.
Well, I wonder how big of a fine they would assess.
They've charged him a couple million euros before, so I wouldn't put it past him to do it again. So, all right, let's move on to a stupid people story. This one's just painful to read. It's from the BBC. Pets go hungry after smart feeders go offline. Owners of a device designed to release food for pets say their animals were left hungry during a week-long systems failure. The thing was a week long. Were you not home for a week? You couldn't just, you know, take the food out of the smart bowl and put it in a regular one? Yeah, PetNet.
I'm going to assume that they weren't home.
They've got to be. PetNet allows owners to schedule and control feeding via a smartphone app. When the BBC contacted PetNet on its advertised email address, the email bounced back with a delivery failure notice. One pet owner tweeted, "My cat starved for over a week," while others complained about hardware issues. "My three Gen 2 feeders constantly jam and won't dispense food," wrote another. Some expressed relief that the feeders were back online now. PetNet had has two Twitter accounts, an official one that has not tweeted since the 30th of August 2019, but the support account issued four tweets between the 14th and 21st of February about the problems experienced. In its first tweet, it said a system outage was affecting second-generation devices and asked customers not to switch off their feeder, even if it appeared to be offline. It said automatic feeds would still dispense. 4 days later, it tweeted again that it hoped to release more information soon. On the 21st of February, it said smart feeders were returning online and a system reset was in progress. Some customers tweeted to the support account complaining of not having received a response. According to Crunchbase, U.S.-based firm PetNet has received 14.9 million in funding since it was founded in December 2012. The device is sold for £222 on the Amazon marketplace in the UK. Good God. $300 for a dog food bowl.
Dog food bowl that automatically dispenses food. I mean, how did you feed your dog before that?
Got the little scoop out and, you know, put food in the bowl. Nearly 60% of the 554 customer reviews left on the U.S. site have given the device a rating of either 1 or 2 stars. As we go towards a more automated home, you have to acknowledge that somewhere along the line things will fall over, said Stuart Miles, founder of a tech site, Pocket Lint. Robots and automated systems have hiccups along the way. It's something we need to get used to. This reads like people weren't feeding their pets because the automatic pet feeder wasn't working. And it's like, dude, you know. Or two, I'm seeing a picture of the damn thing. The food's on top in a little bowl. Most dogs I've met, you know, especially like my sister's dogs, if you left something like that out, they're just going to pop the lid off the top and eat the food out of the top of the damn thing anyways.
I'm hungry. There's food there. I wonder what I'm going to eat.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I guess this one just kind of bothers me because it's like, my cat starved for a week. Did you not notice it wasn't dispensing food and just feed the cat? I mean, come on. Psychros has a good point. People with real dogs don't get these things. People with Pomeranians get these things. Well, yeah, I guess, man. But I just, you know, if you're not home often enough to feed your animal, should you have an animal?
Probably not.
Just a thought. So, anyways. You have anything on that one, Mad Ben?
No. The dog's either smart enough to find its own food, large enough to eat you, or it's not actually a dog, and why the fuck did you buy it in the first place?
Yeah, back in the day, my uncle had a Mexican yipping rat that I just wanted to drop kick. He wanted to drop kick it too. It was my aunt's dog. Well, my aunt at the time. But anyways, it's just
walking. Yeah, that's not a dog. It's a Mexican yipping rat.
What's it do? It yips at you. You tell it, you know, you swat it to go away. It comes back in the room and yips at you. You make one move towards it. It runs away and hides in the other room for 5 minutes. Comes back out and yips at you. It's like, what? You? Where's the dog? Duct taped in the backyard. Why? Get tired of it. So.
I would stick it outside, but the red dog's waiting for me to stick it outside.
Eventually, we're just going to leave the door open and see what happens. Yeah. Anyways, I like Cycross's answer. It's people with real dogs don't get these things. Fair enough. Next article. Actually, I think this is my last news article for tonight. This is from technode.com. Plague Inc. has been removed from the Chinese app stores because of the outbreak. You know, we did the article a couple of weeks ago that people were saying, please don't use Plague Inc. to simulate the coronavirus.
You're not going to model where it's going with Plague Inc. Sir, you are wrong. I will not accurately model where it is going, but I will fucking model whatever the hell I want with Plague Inc.
Actually, the worst thing is there's a picture of somebody trying to, you know, they're showing a screenshot with somebody who's obviously bought the game. And the little cloud download icon, it says the item is no longer available. It's like, well, what if you bought it? Yeah, that's the problem with online stores like this. If they just shut down, your SOL. Popular infection simulation game Plague Inc. has been removed from Chinese app stores. Apple and Xiaomi users noticed today after enjoying renewed population during the COVID-19 outbreak. Whether the game was removed at the behest of the country's regulators is unknown, but it is still available on Apple's app stores outside of China. Chinese authorities have been known to ban adult content and games with politically sensitive hidden messages. Plague Inc. has been praised for its educational value and scientific approach. I don't know. I've managed to get some really funny alerts in Plague Inc. when I used to play it. My favorite was the walking spewing, where you had people walking around in a zombie-like state and throwing up on each other. I mean, yeah. Yeah. So that game had some funny messages and outcomes in it. TechNode has confirmed that Plague Inc. is not available in the Chinese versions of the Apple and Xiaomi app stores as of Thursday. Game is still available on Steam. It's not blocked in China, but the loophole may be short-lived. It's a strategy game that invites users to create and involve a pathogen to take out humanity. Endemic Creations was not available for content by TechNode or comment by TechNode. So, anyways, I mean, that's knee-jerk right there. It's like, really? You're taking out a Plague game because we actually have something going on right now? I mean, really?
That's why they're called an authoritarian government.
That's true. I mean, this is why you don't. This is why we hope Huawei doesn't end up being the main provider of 5G equipment, because you know that the Chinese government's not going to be able to resist if they've got backdoor access to everything to start censoring shit they don't like, because they have a history of it.
Oh, no, I bet everyone in China's read about Tiananmen Square. And
oh, absolutely.
Really loves getting their Taiwanese shit. I might be wrong.
So, anyways, anything on that before we jump into Dojo? Or anything else, I should say?
They'll never be able to infect Madagascar now.
Nice. Here we go.
Not that it was particularly easy to begin with.
I almost always started in Greenland, or one of the areas that had direct flights to Greenland, because of how hard it was to get that one infected. Anyways, so the first thing I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is a pretty cool write-up from Go Secure on a tool called PyRDP. What this is a remote desktop man in the middle setup. And it's fairly trivial to exploit this if you're on the internal network and can do a man in the middle. And that is because most people don't bother to set up the proper certificates and encryption on RDP servers internally, because either one, they go, well, it's never going to be on the internet, why do I need to do proper certificates? Or two, they never think that anybody's going to bother to do this stuff like this. So what this thing basically will do is you set this up as a man in the middle between subnets that have your servers on it and subnets where your clients are connecting, or if it can watch the packets and you see unencrypted RDP, you can just get it that way, and it will collect credentials of people using to log into a remote desktop, and if people are passing through shared drives, it will start collecting files. Because most people don't realize this, but remote desktop will let you do things like connect your local drives to the remote system. Kind of useful for updating things or installing software if you don't have network drives set up. And this will, catch it. And in the passive file crawler they put together, they were even, said, well, we want to avoid exploring huge useless directories like C Windows. So, because they don't care about that, they want the My Documents and things like that. So, this is a write-up of how to set it up with better cap and man in the middle, and then extract files and credentials from the thing. So, yeah, this is kind of an after-exploitation thing, like once you're in a network, but seems like it'd be great fun to play with, too, But, anyways, it's a nice little write-up. They've got some videos showing how to run it, and, if you're interested in abusing people using RDP, this is an excellent tool for it. No comments, cool. Mad Ben?
No. It doesn't let you in the network, but once you're in there, you're having fun with it.
Yes. And potentially you can use the credentials you gather to get further into the network, depending on how it's set up.
Cool.
So, like, for example, let's say you can get on a Wi-Fi network of a company, either through a guest access or maybe you've managed to guess some user's password. And Wi-Fi, despite everyone's best efforts, has still more in common with old school switch or old school hubs than modern switches, in that in a lot of cases, if you're on a network and you're not using some of the higher end Wi-Fi encryptions where each user is basically in a tunnel, you can pretty much capture all the wireless packets and decode them, and so you can play games like running this Pi RDP on that network. Maybe then you can collect an admin password and start, getting deeper access or start collecting files and doing things with that. So it's because, people using the wireless network to RDP into servers is not a terribly uncommon thing, especially in environments that are not as secure, because they don't, they just don't even think that that might be a concern. So we actually make people use a VPN connection if they're on the wireless before they can do anything.
My facilities just doesn't have wireless.
Yeah, that's the better way to go. Cycros, yes. In fact, that's what I was. They have a guide on doing that with BetterCap, which is a newer version of EtherCap. So yes, absolutely. They have some guides on doing that on that page. And then the final thing I have for you tonight is pretty fun. It's a GitHub page that details what's involved in defeating a laptop's BIOS password. And I really get a kick of how they were doing this, because they didn't take advantage of like a bug in the memory or anything like that. They opened up the laptop, connected logic probes to the BIOS chip, dumped the flash, and then were able to eventually, break it down, modify the firmware in memory, and eventually get past the password. But I mean, that's a very hardware level hack, right? So, but that's basically what they did, was they reflashed the BIOS in, well, they didn't flash the BIOS. They modified it in you know, in real time memory. So, do laptops just not have the MOBO battery? Depends on how they're set up. Some do. A lot of more modern ones, the hard disks will be locked to the BIOS password. So if you reset it, you won't be able to read the disks anyways. If they're doing, you know, something like CryptoLocker, then it's going to be locked to the TPM chip. And if you reset the BIOS, you'll probably reset the TPM chip as well. Not always, but, you know, that depends on the individual machine. But I've seen a lot of cases where if you reset the BIOS, like using the hardware jumper, popping the battery out, then the TPM chip will kind of go into an odd state, and you'll usually have to reset that as well. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why these guys were playing around with doing it, you know, in real time, in memory. But some laptops still have the battery, but a lot of times it's difficult to find it. And other times it's not. Like in their picture there, you can clearly see the little coin cell battery. So, but you know, even if the hard drives are just locked to it, they're not actually encrypted. You know, then you got to get those things reset, which is a pain in the behind. And a lot of modern flash disks, modern SSDs, pretty much. Yeah, if they're locked to a BIOS and you reset that BIOS, you've pretty much lost all the data on those SSDs. But it's interesting and it's pretty cool, and it shows just how much work is required to get past some of the modern protections you can put on a laptop. So, anyways, yeah, it looks like it took them 4 months. So, if you read the blog, the write-up, it was a vendor's laptop that was left on site, which I just think is funny. But, yeah, they ended up enabling JTAG and modifying stuff in memory to get past it. And I mean, it's a fun write-up, and it shows you just how much work is involved anymore in defeating a laptop password. So, you know, makes me feel pretty good about some of the controls that I've rammed down the throat of my IT team. Because they didn't want to deal with it. But
by the time they get to the data will no longer be useful.
Pretty much. That's the idea. So that's all I've really got for you tonight. Is, of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 site, the subreddit. And in the IRC tonight, we have myself, Sardonyx, Psychros, Psychros again, DP View, and Madman. Madman, closing thoughts.
Don't really have any.
All right, well, I'm about out of whiskey anyways, so I think that's a good enough place to call it for the night, and I need to start hitting the sound effects buttons.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Welcome to the rice fields.
Down to go nose down and call the night.
But shut up, Wesley.